automating 50% to 70% of a task is pretty easy and also pretty cheap. Automating the next 10% of that task is pricey. When you get down to the last 5%, this is when it costs the multi-millions of dollars. You're talking about every different weird permutation that could happen. It's also probably not worth doing.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. The traditional methodology for selecting software focuses on features and functions. In fact, if you have too many features, the software is likely to be complex and it may be harder for business users to learn and adopt it. While business features are important to select the right software, more often than not, you will rarely use all the features offered by your software. In fact, the overall utilization of your software would probably be lower than 20%. Most software demos focus on the commonly used scenarios, as the demo would be harder for business users to follow. But they are rarely a critical success factor for software selection. In today's episode, we invited an expert panel of cross-functional experts for a live interview on LinkedIn who brings significant expertise with technology procurement and software selection to discuss the critical success factors for software selection. We also discussed the process for building the criteria for software selection and their deeper implications. Finally, we discussed several stories of software selection and how to identify the critical processes that will be similar to performing heart surgery to your business operations. With that, let's get to the conversation. Welcome everyone in today's show. And today we are talking about the criteria for software selection. We are really going to be focusing on the software aspect of the problem from the digital transformation perspective. This is going to be for our executives, especially the CFOs and COOs. And if you are trying to evaluate the software, not the infrastructure or other things, just the software, it could be ERP, CRM, e-commerce, whichever software you are trying to select, you are going to have a number of variables that you need to be reviewing to make sure that you are not going to get into any sort of financial risks or the problems that are going to be part of any of the digital transformation initiatives. Today, we have five panelists here who bring amazing background to be able to talk about, you know, how to do this software selection. So I am going to be starting with the introduction of Aaron. Aaron, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Absolutely. So Aaron Spool, I am a heavily experienced CFO. I run a firm called Aventis, which basically we help mid-sized companies with their finance and accounting needs. Basic thought is that mid-sized firms have the exact same finance and accounting needs that larger ones do. They lack the budget or volume of work to justify a full-time team. We solve that problem through our on-demand teams with their CFO, you know, accounting and public filing needs. That's us in a nutshell.
Yeah, thank you so much for that intro, Aaron. And one of the things that we like to do as part of these panels is we want to create the real world experience for our executives. And we are bringing very diverse background so that we have different perspectives. And this is how your ERP team is probably going to look when you are going to be, let's say, buying your own software. So Aaron is going to bring very important financial perspective to the table. Marcia, do you want to introduce yourself next?
Of course, Sam. I have 18 years of experience in supply chain. I am a consultant in supply chain and procurement, and my focus is on supply chain and digital transformations, mainly ERP and supply chain planning, integrated business planning.
Thank you so much, Marcia, for that intro. And Marcia actually brings very deep manufacturing background. She has been involved in a lot of implementations as the functional consultant, so she knows all the problems that you are going to run into when you are doing the ERP implementation or the procurement. Next, I am actually going to move to Tim. Tim, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Sam. I'm Tim Harrison, VP of Sales at Warm Commerce. Warm Commerce is a lightweight supplier management tool that allows companies, small and medium-sized businesses, manage supplier information, supplier risk and performance, as well as a B2B or industrial B2B marketplace tool.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much, Tim, for that intro. And Tim actually brings a very important background, and this is going to be important for you guys as well, for our panelists, that he's really expert of the warehouse processes. That's where his core expertise is, and he's going to bring a lot of intel from that perspective. Russ, next, I'm actually going to move to you. If you don't mind, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Sam. And thanks, everybody. Yeah, my name is Russ Graff. I'm with NetStock. I'm a vice president of channel management for them. NetStock is a third-party add-on product to about 40-plus ERPs, and we focus on demand planning and forecasting inventory optimization. Been with them about 7 years and in the ISV channel about 10, but prior to that, 25 years as a reselling business partner. And some of that time was with CPA firms where we did software selection projects on behalf of our clients, even though we also were a reseller, sometimes competing for that business, which was a little bit of a conflict of interest and one was challenging. So hopefully I can bring some history to the conversation from that perspective as well.
And thanks for joining us today. I mean, this is your first panel, and we are super excited to have you in having your multi-ERP and the channel expertise that you are going to bring to the table. Thank you so much. Shaheen, do you want to introduce yourself next?
For sure. Thank you, Sam. So I'm Shaheen Diwani. I manage all technology procurement, and I come with 14 years of experience in the sourcing, procurement, and contract management space. So when I look at technology, I'm looking at it from the sourcing and evaluation lens, and that's why I'm really excited to be here today.
Okay, thank you so much, Shaheen, for joining us. This is your first panel as well. We are super excited to have you. You bring a very unique experience to the panel, and that is going to be really your technology procurement experience that I don't think anybody else has. So again, it's going to be very unique. Okay, so let's get going. So we are going to starting with the first question, and that is going to be really developing the criteria. So let's say if I'm the executive and I'm trying to figure out, okay, I need to buy an enterprise software. It could be CRM, it could be ERP, e-commerce, whatever. Okay, I am simply trying to buy a software. What are different factors that I should be looking at when I am planning for this procurement? I am going to start with you, Marcia, if you don't mind. What have you seen in your experience? What are different factors that I should be looking at?
Yes, that is a great question, because I have seen both approaches. One that is to go to the market and see all the applications available and the functionalities. And another one, a different approach, is to look at what the different functional owners or different teams need. So I like the second approach, and this is what I have seen in most large companies, like Fortune 500 companies. So we need to start identifying who needs to be involved, from who we need to listen. And then we can use different tools, like Six Sigma tools, AKJ, we can do, or different diagrams, but we need to identify who is going to be impacted by the new application, as well as the requirements, the must have and the nice to have. That is a very important distinction. Not everything is a must have. So that is how we start building the criteria to select an application.
Okay, great insights there. And obviously the must-have requirements, and we need to identify the must-have that we are identifying for ourselves are the real must-haves, meaning they should have some sort of financial implication. Sometimes I have seen a lot of different templates where they are going to list, let's say, 250 different requirements. They are going to have a must-have, nice to have, but when it comes to implementation fails because we did not identify the right must-haves and right nice to have. So Shaheen, you actually sit in a very unique position in your organization, and you are typically tasked
for this assignment that, hey, you need to buy this piece of software or the technology, and you need to develop this criteria, some sort of RFP. So what are the factors that you have seen in your experience working based on your 15 years of experience?
So definitely, you know, I'm going to build on what Marcy also said. There could be a solutions-based requirements or where you share your problem with the vendor community, or you go back to what's important to you, right? You look at your, what is important? Is integration important? Is this going to be plug and play? Is this going to be really strategic? Then you're only going to look at the top quadrant of the Gartner's report for vendors that are mature in this space. What is your risk appetite? What is the cybersecurity exposure there? Is there privacy? Are you going to be sharing sensitive data? So all of those elements will come together, for which then you will build your must-haves versus nice-to-haves. But I think I work in the banking industry right now, where data, privacy, GDPR, and all of these elements come into play, and you cannot leave any stakeholder out. So if it's strategic, you will look at more mature vendors. You may not have the appetite to work with smaller vendors, and hence your requirements will be more robust in terms of functionality delivery, as well as integration and data. But if it is something that is less strategic, you can play around with, you want to be an innovator, you can look at some niche products that are just upcoming and bringing the innovation to light. So software selection can be tricky like that, but I think you need to know what you're looking to acquire. If it's something like you mentioned, Sam, in your previous question, is it CRM? Is it ERP? Those are driving forces for the organization. You know, your criteria for that will be very different than a marketing tool or something that you want to gather customer feedback. You know, that'll be more nimble and agile, and you can plug and play with different softwares to create a more robust product offering. But when it depends on the strategic initiative that we're talking about here.
You are touching strategic versus non-strategic. So my perception of strategic versus non-strategic is going to be, let's see, if it is touching your operational or financial processes, if it is touching the backbone of your organization, that's probably going to be strategic for you. But let's say if you have a tool that is sitting on the side, you know, you are playing with that and you are trying to make some sort of decision which does not play, let's say, in your order to cash process or procure to pay process, that does not impact the customer delivery, that does not impact the customer experience, then that could be slightly non-strategic. So that's my perception. One more comment I am going to make related to these vendors, especially the technology accreditation vendors. For example, you mentioned Gartner. Gartner, I mean, again, these companies are great, but you need to know how to read those reports because there are going to be fine lines. So just by looking at, I got this magic quadrant. Hey, you know what? My tool number one is charting higher. Okay, this must be the best and that should work for me. Software systems, they are not designed to work. Okay, the fit is going to be really important. Just because you are seeing something on Gartner, it does not mean that that is going to be the best fit for your business, for your unique situation. So I would add that. So Russ, I'm actually going to move to you next. What are your insights based on your experience? And again, you work in a many different implementation, many different ERP ecosystems. You have seen all good, bad, and ugly, I guess, of the ERP world. So how would you approach the software selection?
Yeah, I think a key for me is focus, right? You're in the market looking for a solution, so you need to really understand what the pain is. You know, why am I here and what is it I'm trying to solve? And if it's a comprehensive new ERP system, then that's obviously very strategic. It's heart surgery on the business, high risk, right? We know a lot of stories of the failure rate of ERP implementations.
Yeah.
So you really need to do your due diligence, involve the user community has been suggested and so forth, and really focus in. One of the things that I've seen in a lot of cases is a lot of attention paid to minutiae and minor details that really don't matter. Those aren't what's going to be where it's going to move the needle, what's going to be a strategic initiative for you and your organization, how I process accounts payable, if it's one extra keystroke versus another application, that stuff just doesn't matter. And I see a lot of firms get bogged down in that kind of stuff. Yeah. So for me, a big focus is just that focus, identify what the biggest pain points are and start there. And then you can work your way down to some of the details once you've cleared the mess a little bit.
Yeah, and I love the way you use the phrase you know, heart surgery around the ERP, and that is the right comparison, in my opinion. Yeah. And that's the right way to think about it. And you are going to have a tool here, which is probably not going to be comparable to your heart surgery. So anything that is that touches ERP is definitely going to be equivalent to your heart surgery. So you need to be slightly careful the way you evaluate your requirements, the way you prioritize. So next, I am actually going to move to Aaron. Aaron, what's your opinion so far in terms of building the criteria for software selection?
So I'm going to take it from just a pure CFO perspective.
Yeah.
First and foremost, and what the heck do you want this thing to do? You've gone into, and you've all raised incredibly important points, but just from a CFO perspective, that stuff's not jarring to me. I just care about, so you're going to come to me and you'll be like, so I'm going to care about what is the thing supposed to do? And I'm going to look at it from an ROI to a company perspective.
Yeah.
So that's the first step. So you want to get into the door. How's this going to affect the company? How's it going to affect the bottom line of the company? Part one. The second is, what's it going to cost to implement? And whatever estimate you give me is wrong. Probably have to double, if not triple it. And then the last part is that, what's it going to cost to maintain this thing? And I guarantee that's wrong as well. The first one is that I say where they get you the most is the new staff you need to hire to maintain this piece of software that you have. It's something new. You do not have the internal staff to run it, almost guaranteed, especially something big and strategic. And you're going to need that help. And I don't care what the maintenance plan is from the implementation firm. I don't care what the ongoing support is from the software vendor selling it to you. Who are the internal people going to run this thing? Do you have the skill set to do it? And if not, what's that skill set going to cost to acquire and maintain? So that's me.
Okay, amazing point there, Aaron. And obviously the ROI is going to be extremely, extremely important. And you raised some super important points, especially around the estimation. And you're absolutely right. The estimates that your team is going to provide, you are better off doing, you know, just doubling or tripling, because that's the real world scenario, to be honest. I mean, that's how the software implementations are. So great, great points there. Tim, what is your experience, I mean, in terms of finding the software? So let's say if you were running the software selection engagement yourself for your own company, how would you approach this?
Well, first, I would, I guess it depends on what, you know, what type of software. But if it's a strategic software, I'd look at, first off, what are our needs? And then what is the process? What is the process that we want this software to accomplish? Or maybe accomplish isn't the right term, but what's the flow of the software need to be? So if we already have a system and we needed to do a new system to do certain things, then we need to document what is our expectation of that process. We put these inputs in, we get these outputs out. I think having that functional, spec or scope of work, I think that's really important, because when you go to someone like Aaron and say, hey, I want to buy this software, I should know what the software really does and what I need it to do. Not just what a vendor says it's going to do, but what do I need it to do? And that's one of those tools that you can put in your scope of work and your RFQ, so that a vendor can look at it and say, you know what, we can do these things and we cannot do these things, or maybe we can charge you a little bit more to do those other things you wanted. So having that functional scope of work really, I think, is almost a backbone to an RFQ when it comes to software selection, because that's what ties the operational side of the business to the financial side of the business and as part of that RFQ process.
Okay, so amazing insights there overall in terms of defining the context, what the software is going to do. So guys, what I am trying to accomplish as part of this panel, and I try to be the proxy of the executive. So here, obviously, I know that you guys probably need a little bit of context in terms of which software are we trying to select. But as an executive, what I am trying to accomplish here is I need to figure out how to write this RFP. That's what I am trying to figure out, okay, so that I can select these vendors. So I am asking you guys, okay, help me with some of the variables that I need to be paying attention to when I am approaching this RFP. Now, you guys can take some of the examples of these stories that you have seen from your experience of the software selection. What are the things that you should be looking at, and what are the things you should not be looking at probably when you are approaching an RFP? So I don't know if you're going to have any specific stories of the RFP failures where you bought the software, it didn't work for yourself or for your client, or something that you have seen in your experience. So Marcia, I'm actually going to start with you again. Okay. And I'm asking for help. I am an executive. I am trying to buy the software. The only thing I need to make sure is I don't want to get burned. I am trying to understand all the factors that I need to be paying attention to. I've never done this before. And that's why I'm coming to you now. Okay, can you help me?
Of course. I think there are two key points from what we have been talking. One is the business case. So in the business case, we need to show why we are getting or we are suggesting a new piece of software. But that is a pre-step of developing the criteria, the selection criteria for the software. So it's two separate aspects. And so once it is approved, the business case, let's say that yes, the organization decides to implement an ERP. Maybe they don't have any ERP at the moment. So once it is approved, then we need to build the criteria to evaluate the different options in the market. As we have been talking, we need to define different aspects. One can be like how this software fits in the general strategy. You may think, why are we going to do that? Well, in one large company in the food industry, the headquarters was using a particular company, SAP, right? And they wanted an application for planning, for supply chain planning, that didn't belong to SAP. So that needs to be in the criteria, right? How it fits to the general strategy. Other aspects can be like how the vendor reputation. We talk about the Gartner's quadrant. That is another aspect to consider. The information that is available in the market, because it's much easier, right? If it is well known, the solution, we go and find the answer. That is it. And then, of course, the specifics for each function. So once we have that defined, then we need to add the weight to each section, right? For example, in some cases, can be price, that it will have a highway. So those are the aspects, like there are some general aspects and how it fits to the strategy, and then some more specific to what we expect the software to accomplish.
Okay, some amazing insights there. And, I am going to be building on what you just said. So some of the things, especially when you talk about the vendor credibility, the company that is publishing the software. So you definitely need to, and the way you mentioned that, you need to be paying attention to whether that vendor is credible in the market. And the reason why the credibility matters is because the financial stability of the vendor is going to be super important. Any of the business software that you are buying for the next 5 to 10 years. So you need to make sure that that vendor is going to survive in the market for next 5 to 10 years. And they have enough money in their pockets to be able to maintain the software, to be able to comply with the financial regulations that are changing on a daily basis. So the software needs to be innovating on a daily basis. If they are not able to keep up with that, then you are going to be ending up in the same situation where you need to switch the software again, because the vendor that you chose, they don't really have deep enough pockets to be able to support that software. Because software development, especially when you talk about the enterprise software, they are super expensive. So the vendor that you are buying from, they need to have deep pockets overall. So their financial stability is extremely important. Thank you so much, Marcia, for sharing those thoughts. Shaheen, I'm actually going to move to you next. Okay, so in your experience, describe the process. When you approached the RFP, what were the variables that you paid attention to?
Definitely. So we always look at top down. So what is the main tool that you're currently using? Right? And how important is it for this software to integrate easily into that or not? Yep. The compatibility elements, right? Now, in the world of APIs, it's usually not very convoluted, but sometimes you can have risks and exposure to data leakage or other cybersecurity threats as well. So looking at it through that risk-averse lens, you want to find what is the governing infrastructure that this software needs to come in, and be able to work and integrate seamlessly into. If there are those elements, you wanted to understand them first, the compatibility and the integration. The secondly, what scale are you looking at? Are you looking at enterprise-wide? Are you looking at just a small department, right? You're also looking at where does the scope begin and where does it end in terms of functionality and services? And I think to Marcia's point, you want to understand what is most important, right? Is the price most important? What functionality is most important? Is your availability, right, of the service important as well? What are the SLAs that you're looking for right now? You need to build that into your requirements, because a software that's not available 99.999% of the time, as a bank, it's useless. My customers need to be able to log in online anytime and be able to access my services. So that availability is really important to me, right? So your SLAs also have to be built into your requirements right off the bat. And training and development, support and maintenance, right? Considerations like on-prem, SaaS, cloud, things like that, right? Their relationship with my cloud providers, for example, whether it's Google or Amazon, are they a selected partner? Are they a gold partner, a silver or platinum partner? All of those elements. And then cost elements. How is cost broken down? All of that you have to build in, because if you don't consider them at the upfront, you're going to not be able to compare apples to apples. You're going to get very different proposals and you're going to have very different costs of ownership without visibility into everything, A, that's important to you, and B, that's being delivered to you. So it's very different from acquiring materials where you know what you're buying because you can inspect it. A software is going to come into your environment, and only after it's completely implemented and integrated will you know really how you're able to reap the benefits. So taking the time at the front to plan your requirements and understand, and maybe even leverage examples such as free trials to really see, you know, how this is going to scope out in your organization is really important.
Okay, some great points there. And I am going to retouch some of them. And one of the things that you mentioned is just looking at different proposals. And in case of the enterprise software, it's going to be extremely difficult overall to make them apple to apple. It's never apple to apple. It's very, very, very hard. Just because you have thousands of variables there, typically to be able to compare. The next point that you mentioned is the compatibility and integration. I think that is going to be super critical. One of the things that we need to be mindful overall from the compatibility and the integration perspective, when you talk about the larger banks or the banking industry or the industries that are going to have far deeper pockets overall in terms of IT, or if they are going to have the internal IT team. For them, let's say if you have the APIs and if you have tons and tons of money to be able to integrate the software, then you have no problem at all. But if you are talking about the SMB manufacturing and distribution organization, they are super stressed. Their margins are super low overall from the bottom line perspective. They don't necessarily have as much appetite to be able to take as much risk. So for them, the pre-built integration is going to be a key. Okay, and just because you have API, that does not mean that the integration is pre-built. Your integration could be as big as a project as your ERP. So make sure you pay attention to that. A couple of other points that you mentioned, SLA and support are going to be super important overall for the software selection perspective. Typically, that falls into your implementation, but the way your pricing is done, the way your support is going to be from your software vendor, that is going to be super critical as well. In the enterprise software world, especially when you talk about the ERP system, you might not be able to get the free trial. Okay, even if you get the free trial, you might be rejecting that software just because you might feel that it's not easy to use. Typically, ERP systems are extremely complex. You would require some sort of training before you are able to use. So free trial could be a great catch for a lot of different vendors, just because, you know, it could be a very small software module. And they might say that, you know what, use it and you will be able to use it this in, let's say, one day. But it does not have the same depth. When you talk about your demand planning, when you talk about your supply chain planning, when you talk about the complex scenarios from the pricing and discount, you will not be able to accomplish those. And if you want to keep all of those requirements in mind, you need to get trained before you are qualified to do the free trial on the software. So great, great points. I'm actually going to move to Russ next. Russ, what are your thoughts so far in terms of the criteria?
Yeah, a couple of things have come to mind. First of all, in my experience now, most of us that are in the market buying, I think a lot of your audience is probably their third or fourth or fifth generation, right, that they've been through this process. So when I started doing implementations of ERPs back in the, you know, in the 90s and going through Y2K and those kinds of timelines, some of those were first-time buyers of really critical ERP or nerve center type applications. And so they really needed a lot of help. Nowadays, you've probably got experienced people within your firm that have been through this process a few times. So leverage that, right? Interview those folks. What did you learn from that? The good and the bad and the ugly, right? The second thing that occurs to me is that even if you have that experience internally and you've got somebody that could maybe launch that and run that project and that internal evaluation, et cetera, they may not have the time. That may not be their best use of time for you and your organization, right? So maybe the best thing to do is to outsource that to a third-party supplier or a consulting firm. CPA firms and other independent consulting firms often do system selection projects, and maybe that's a way to partner with them. The other thing that occurred to me is that one of the things that Marcia mentioned was two approaches, right? And one would be to go out and survey the market, and the other is look internally. I think those can actually help each other. You can survey the market, get a list of key criteria, and then use that to have the discussions internally. Is this something that we should be thinking about? Maybe there's something that we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes looking at that external market environment educates us a little bit, has us have those internal conversations that maybe we wouldn't have gone down that path before. So a couple of things occurred to me, some great ideas. But yeah, as I think about trying to walk in the door to Aaron and get approval of my business case, the first thing I'm going to get asked is, well, prove to me that we really need this. Prove to me that what we have today, what we've already invested in, can't do it. And again, one of my experiences as an ERP partner and support organization is that many times, and we've heard, you know, statistics and we hear this anecdotally, that many firms barely scratch the surface of the products that they've already invested in. So let's make sure that we really are at a dead end, that we really are being constrained somehow in our business growth or profitability with the systems that we have, and that we can't really continue to extend what we have and save ourselves some expense and some time and so forth. So a few things that occurred to me during some of the other topics here.
Okay, some amazing insights there, Russ, and I am going to retouch them just to build on top of them. So the points that you mentioned, especially around the third and fourth generation ERP buyers, and if we are going to have third and fourth generation ERP buyers, I'm not worried about them. The reason why I'm not worried about them is because they have done four cycles and they know what to expect. Okay, it's almost like getting married four times, and then after that, you are going to be super conservative that, you know what, I now know, you know, what marriage is all about. There are going to be at least thousands or millions of variables that I need to be paying attention to. You know, I better lower down my expectation. I better be realistic. So I'm not
and
too
maybe
worried about
getting married again.
Exactly. Yeah,
or maybe you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
let's be clear. That's a
possibility.
Exactly.
Aaron.
So when we talk about the ERP implementation failure, and there's this notion that, you know what, 60% or 70% ERP implementation fail. But if you look at the failure rate of the ERP implementation, of the people who are buying it for the first time, I can almost guarantee that that's probably going to be 90%, because they don't know what they are doing. Trust me, because they just don't know what to expect, how to plan, how to overall be realistic with the expectations, with vendors, with the team, with everything that you are doing. The newer people who are buying it for the first time, they just don't get this idea why ERP implementation or any software is just hard, but they are meant to be hard. So the more you embrace, the more you understand, the easier life you are going to have if you are first gen. Third gen, fourth gen, fourth time married, I'm not worried about that. Okay. The other point that you mentioned, and Aaron actually thinks brilliantly about the total cost. And I don't know how many organizations really think about the total cost. And total cost includes the opportunity cost of your organization. Okay. Typically, in my experience, especially when I look at the SMB, the internal cost is all free because anyways, they might be doing something right now. Not a cost for me. But, you know, the internal cost is going to be real cost in your project that you need to plan. And you need to make sure that you are comparing your internal cost, because a person who has done this work 5,000 times, they are going to be far more efficient overall in doing their job, in the implementation, they are going to bring the best practices that your internal team might not have. So pay attention to that as well. Now, I am actually going to move to Aaron next. Aaron, what are the factors in your opinion that we have not covered so far?
So let's talk a little bit about cost savings and the estimates that go into that. One of my old CFO mentors used to say to me, I can't do anything with a fourth or a fifth of a head. So if you're going to tell me we're going to do this process and it's going to save a fifth of the time of something, I can do nothing with that. Because let's be clear here. No one is going to magically, in a corporation, we're talking a corporation, we're not talking about everyone on this panel, we're talking a corporation, a corporate world, because I've just saved a fifth of my time. I'm going to find some amazing efficient use for that in the company to drive the bottom line. That is not going to happen. Not. So what ends up happening is I see these cost savings, like, oh, I've saved a little bit of this process, a little bit of that process, doesn't matter. So the first thing that I, as a principal as a CFO, is that if you are going to come to me with cost savings, I want names attached. Not mythical heads. This is a very sad thing, but it's, I want the names of the people whose jobs will be eliminated.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to repurpose them to open recs or things like that, that's fine, but that has to be in the strategy too. But they have to identify before you go through this process. And it has to be committed automatically up front. If that doesn't happen, the odds of you having any of these cost savings, I'm not gonna believe it. That's part one. Part two is that, Russ, you really touched on this well. Do you actually need this thing? Have you gone through every little step? So there is, I would say, I like this, and this is very, very anecdotal. I've always liked this saving. Saying automating 50% to 70% of a task is pretty easy and also pretty cheap. Automating the next 10% of that task is pricey. When you get down to the last 5%, this is when it costs the multi millions of dollars. You're talking about every different weird permutation that could happen. It's also probably not worth doing. Unless you can point out exactly what's going to happen because of this new ERP system, I'm not really interested. And if you're telling me, oh, we're going to have better data, really? What are you going to do with it? Are you actually going to make better data-driven decisions? I'm like, oh, we're going to make better data-driven decisions. Isn't that sweet? What analysis are you actually going to do? Then how's that going to drive the bottom line? What are you exactly? So you're telling me right now that you would be, what revenue commitment are you going to give to me? This is one of my favorite things to do. Besides cost commitments, I like forcing divisions to give me revenue commitments. Okay, I'm going to tie your bonus to the extra revenue that this ERP is going to produce. You still want it? Let's just say after you do those two things, oddly enough, you find Excel is just such an amazing ERP by itself. Wow, did you know that this thing that the Microsoft Office has this database called Access? Did you know? That oddly enough, anyone who had to tie their bonus to an ERP implementation, suddenly Access is good enough. So I would tell you that we fall into these ideas of like, oh, we're going to do something with this. We're going to be faster. We're going to be stronger. We're going to be, you're not the $6 million man. Right? That really aged me, by the way, with that reference. All right. But you're not going to do anything with this. I guarantee. So unless the only way you can force that is tie it back to their comp and tie it to revenue projections. And then you'd be surprised how all this stuff dissipates.
Yeah. So a couple of very important points there. And I love the way you think tying that with the cost savings. So really naming that down as opposed to getting married with some of these buzzwords that get thrown around. They don't mean anything. So you need to be definitely paying attention to the real cost savings. And you should be able to quantify that. One comment that you mentioned about whose jobs is going to be eliminated, I can almost promise this. If you are going to be talking about the job elimination during your digital transformation initiatives or the ERP implementations, your employees are going to be your worst enemy, okay? They will take every effort to shut that initiative down, okay? Because you are talking about job elimination. But when you talk about the ERP, or, you know, I don't know a Fortune 500 company that is running on Excel. Okay, I don't know a $100 million company that is running on Excel.
I know plenty.
And I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. I'm sorry. No, that's now I need to find the data. Now you need to prove me where you are getting that data from. Okay, I need evidence of that. I need people who I can talk to. There's no way. I know a company that was $100 million. They were running on the Access database. The books were closing on a laptop. It was dependent upon one person in the organization. The whole organization was dependent upon one person.
That's actually modern.
On one laptop. That means your desktop. the fortune of your corporation is dependent upon one person and one laptop. Can you believe this?
Yes.
I cannot guarantee if my laptop right now is going to work in the next 5 minutes. I don't have any confidence in that. I don't know how you are going to be.
Sam, you need to upgrade your laptop if you're not confident to be working in 5 minutes.
There are plenty of companies out there. Now, if you're talking about there, while a company might not run, meaning that their entire back office isn't run, there are significant processes that are done with low-tech tools. So that is my supposition. So it's like you think that, oh, I've got this beautiful ERP and it's handling it. Oh, no. There are plenty of things done outside of the big, beautiful system realm that is, yeah. Take a walk to any of these companies and ask them to say, look at the data. You know this. You look at the data. But you look at all you have to do is look at an internal audit report of data flow for any of the key processes. And if they do it right, you're going to see plenty of things like, you do what? That's it. Talk to your internal auditors.
So let me give you a little data point, Aaron, here. And this is the real data coming from the market. If you actually do a little bit of Googling of the SMB organizations in the US market, you are going to find that 90% of them are going to be under $5 million in revenue or $10 million in revenue. If you analyze and compare the process of those $5 to $10 million revenue versus the processes of the $100 million revenue, they will have far more automation in their process. That's a real fact. You can go and check on Google today. Okay, but the reason why these $5 to $10 million companies don't grow is because they are relying on those manual processes. They are relying on those spreadsheets. They are a nightmare for growth. You can run a lifestyle business, but you can never run a real business on the spreadsheet that's given. Okay, that's why software exists. That's why enterprise software exists. So I'm actually going to move to Tim next. Tim,
what? I would beg to differ, Sam. I just know plenty of construction firms out there that have grown to $100 million.
And you need to be dialing those CEOs as of today, and they will not be able to sleep. I can almost guarantee this. There's no way they are sleeping today if they are running on a spreadsheet. Tim, your thoughts so far in terms of building the criteria.
Yeah, I've got a couple of things. I will say, the oil and gas industry and the construction, those guys, you'd be surprised at the revenue numbers that these companies, they're 2, 3, 4, 5 people, they're pulling in, tens of millions of dollars in revenue, and they are just running off Excel spreadsheets. But I would say the vast majority of those 5 to 10 million, maybe even up to 20 million, they're running off of QuickBooks, the old Peachtree systems. Like, it's very basic. They call that their ERP system, even though, like, for most of us, those are not ERP systems. They're very rudimentary accounting systems, but that's what they use as their ERP. That's what they're using for their supplier database. That's what they're using for decision making and whatnot. So on that end, I will support Aaron to an extent that, there are some, you'd be surprised.
This is recorded. I'll just let you know, Sam. This is recorded.
Right. This is getting recorded. This is going to be published on YouTube. I'm telling you.
I support Aaron. But then the other thing I think we haven't touched on is, if you're selecting software, you got to look at the hardware you need. There are plenty of software systems that in the fine print, it says you need this processor, you need this server, you need this, you need that. And those costs can add up really quickly.
Yeah.
And if you don't account for those as part of your selection criteria, you're going to be surprised when the vendor, as part of their implementation says, hey, so where are all those new laptops? Where are all those new computers that you need? And then you're kind of scrambling at the last minute. And I've had this happen where we've sold software, get to the customer site and say, Mr. Customer, where is the computer that we're supposed to install this on? And they give you a computer and it can't, the operating system is, Windows 2000. And it's like, well, Windows doesn't even support this anymore. So we need the actual hardware to drive these systems. And with modern software comes modern requirements. That's very important, I believe.
So actually, Sam, before we go, so Tim said something very perfectly. There are so many assumptions that go into this that are never written down, that you just assume that, of course they're going to have this. Assume nothing. Just assume that nothing is there. And that is the only, and then your odds of implementation success drastically increase. Assume that they don't have any of these things. And when they say that they do, triple check to make sure they actually understand what they're committing to.
Yeah, so some of very important points, Tim, and especially I like these comparisons, and they are slightly not apple to apple in my experience. So when you talk about these construction firms, the way construction firms work are very different from a manufacturing firm or the retail and distribution. I'll tell you why. Because the volume you are going to have in a distribution firm, in a retail firm, in a manufacturing firm, the amount of moving pieces you have, okay, are going to be very different from a law firm, from an accounting firm, from a construction firm. Because a construction firm could be doing, let's say, hundreds of millions of dollars, and they could have just one project, just one project. Okay, so that's not a right comparison. This is a very different business process. Okay, I'm not worried about construction firm at all. There could be tons and tons of construction companies that could very well run on QuickBooks because they don't have the volume. They don't have the complexity. They don't have as many moving parts in terms of the cost tracking and the control. So again, look at your business, a retail business, which is doing the, let's say, the $5 transaction. Look at the amount of bookkeeping, how much cost you have in the bookkeeping. Once you install the ERP, then your bookkeeping cost is going to come down, let's say, by 80%. Bookkeeping cost is going to be a key factor in your, and that is never considered in case of your ERP implementation, because you are automating the whole bookkeeping process. Otherwise, you are going to, I'm actually running my books here, and I know how much effort we need to put in as the executive, as people, and that all is going to be taken care of by the ERP system or the software system, because you are automating that process.
That is a huge assumption that's a different discussion. You're actually automating a process and automating it effectively and having it actually do something properly. And that can actually handle all the different interesting variables that are out there. And also what happens when the gap changes or IFRS changes. It's going to magically automatically automate that too.
No, I'm not saying you are going to be automating everything. No, Aaron, you seem to be very binary thinker, I guess. It's not always just one and zero, right?
I'm just a skeptic when it comes to this stuff. I think that, look, I'm a huge proponent of technology. I'm a user of a lot of technology. I also know, I remember, I'll go back to the axiom I learned at business school when I was taking advanced tech, and they all told me, says, listen, your head of IT is going to come to you. They're going to want all these brand new systems. Why do they want the brand new systems? Because it pads their resume. Your job is to make sure that it's financially viable. And odds are you don't need the new thing. You need whatever is the most effective at the best price. And also, here's the other thing. Never underestimate the power of the human mind and the hands and a huge giant labor force that's just cheap that does it inefficiently. From an actualist perspective, it's just you might not actually need to do this. The actual ROI is probably not as high as you think. Do I agree with you that you need but it goes back to, are you actually going to do something with this? Are you doing something with this efficiency? Are you going to take advantage of that? What's your strategy behind that? That's when you bring in like the actual business folks and say, okay, who should be driving these ERP decisions? Isn't anyone in this room or this virtual room is the actual business leader. They have to eventually own it. And they have to want it. They have to say, this is our plan to actually not just implement, but here's all our great strategies we're going to implement because of that. If not, if it's just some sort of, this is the new model.
Marcia, what are your thoughts so far? Again, we are looking at the criteria, the factors. Do you agree, disagree with whatever has been said so far? Do you want to share anything from your experience?
Yes. With respect to the size, because I see that we are talking about, again, 2 points. One, if it is worth it, and then how to select if we say yes. So with respect to the first point about calculating the ROI, when companies need an ERP, in many situations, it's because they are growing. They just cannot keep up. And that translates into late deliveries. For instance, they just cannot meet or they don't have enough capacity. They cannot manage capacity and they need to start prioritizing certain customers that they can call them strategic customers. So when they are starting to struggle with growth, and that can happen organically or in CPG, is very common acquisitions. So one day you are working, it's fine, what the tools that you are using, they are great, but then all of a sudden, okay, now we acquired a new company. So there are new processes, they have a different system, and we need to do something. And in many occasions, okay, they decide to have everything in the ERP. So when we consider the benefit, I know that we can talk about cost savings, but there's also some potential that we are missing or that we can be missing. And I don't like that. I know because it's hard to measure. So I understand that because I am in supply chain, but I'm coming from accounting background. So I always look at the cost savings. But the company can be missing opportunities. And if there's a way to quantify that, like to be faster in the market and launch new products, that should be considered when we decide to obtain a software, an ERP, or it can be to help specifically with supply planning. That is about the first point. Then the second point. I have seen companies, and I get that, very large, that they are using Excel or they are using Access database, and it works really well with planning. Okay. And those companies, yes, they are very large. And the reason why they are using at the same time Excel spreadsheet is because they don't have access to certain functionalities of the ERP system. So they need to do their work as well, but they just cannot have access. So, okay, that situation can change. That's fine, but I have seen that is one of the reasons. Another reason is training. Typically, when we implement an ERP, we are all about training. I don't know, videos, PDF, workshops, different ways. But then it stops, and we get new people on board, and they don't get that training, okay? They just don't get it. So that is another reason why they are using. So yes, to Aaron's point, I have seen that, but they coexist. They have an ERP because if not, they cannot have their financials. It's just that there are some functions, and I'm referring this in particular to planning, that, well, many organizations are immature. Okay. They are not using statistics, for example, to forecast and demand planning. So they need to improve. So talking about the criteria we need to consider, the maturity of the organization, as you were saying, right? If it is the first time implementing an ERP and you put SAP, let's see how it goes. Not SAP Business One. So it's very important. And another aspect that we have also mentioned, but I would like to emphasize, is implementation. That is critical.
Yeah, so some great insights there, especially around the maturity and the skill set. I think that's definitely a factor in terms of your own culture and the skill set that you are going to have in adopting that solution. If you are going to be a very traditional organization, maybe you should go for slightly more traditional solution. If you're a newer organization, maybe you should go for newer. So great point there. Shaheen, I'm going to change up this question a bit, and we are super tight on time right now. So let's say if you were running your own company and if you were buying this for your own company, what are other factors that you are going to look for in a solution? Would you feel comfortable, let's say, running your organization on that spreadsheet?
So, Sam, that's a great question. When I talk about the bank as a highly regulated environment, but not so long ago, we had all our contracts on Excel, on an Excel spreadsheet. Now, that's okay if you have a limited number of contracts, right? But when the number of vendors that you're working with or your number of clients, whatever your data is, as that expands, you need more protection of that data in terms of someone not being able to come in and inadvertently change something. You could miss contract expiry dates, which would trigger automatic renewals of something else, which would mean you're on the line for a payment that you did not pre-consider to terminate early or not, right? We went to Google App Maker. We built an in-house contract repository system. We did not go out for a software yet. What happens? It's finicky. It's not reliable. You know, it's not, it's so then you come up against a wall. You need a software. You need something that's out of package. You need something that's reliable, that will deliver, that is easy to use, that you can just pick up and spin. That was our criteria. You need a low cost because it's not an essential function. As a bank, your contract repository of your vendors is not so important, right? Like, that's not critical to the delivery of financial services. So all of those criteria, when you pick together for small and medium-sized organizations, cost efficiency, ROI, you know, implementation and integration, as well as maintenance and operations, and being able to really leverage it for what you acquired it, right? Which will impact your processes and vice versa as well. That is the range of all your evaluation criteria for your software.
Yeah, I love the way you are describing the implications of not managing those contracts in the automated fashion. And by the way, you are absolutely right. The contract is not supposed to be as serious document as your invoice or sales order or the other documents that are going to have far deeper implications. So if contract has that much implication, think about, you know, if your sales orders are actually being managed manually or the invoices are being managed manually. So great points there. Russ, what are your thoughts so far?
I think, and I've heard this talked about in previous sessions that you've done, where you talk about the framework of processes and people and technology. And I think we've all touched on those three things in different ways and in different contexts. But I think that's still the right framework. You know, we're all technology type people, but you have to understand where it fits in that framework. Yep. And I've walked into businesses that were looking to buy software from me when I was in the partner mode and looking for ERP applications. And I'd go through their warehouse or through their workshop, through their shop floor, and see stuff everywhere, right? Boxes all over, broken components, raw materials laying on the floor, no accounting for it. And I'd walk away from that business because all you're going to do is try to automate a mess. And I'm not going to be successful, right? I'm going to have an unhappy customer that's going to want their money back. I'm going to have consultants that'll quit on me. So the last thing you want to do is automate a mess. So make sure that you're organized, that you understand what your processes are, that you've got people that know those processes. And now I can apply some technology to hopefully improve those and get more efficient if that's what the business case proves. But I think that's the framework we always have to keep in mind.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I would probably walk away from that business as well, because it's not going anywhere, to be honest. it's only going to be a mess. So great, great point there. So guys, we are super tight on time and we are simply going to do the closing advice right now. And that is going to be just in one sentence. So I am going to start with you, Tim. What is your closing advice in just one sentence?
Know what you're buying, and what you're buying is only what you've documented. So anything outside of that, you're not paying for it. You're not buying it.
Yeah, great point. I think you are touching the similar point as Russ, that, you know, you need to be slightly organized and documented before you do the software.
Yep.
Aaron, what is your closing advice? One sentence, please.
Be prepared when this thing actually goes live.
Be prepared. So great. Marcia, what is your closing advice?
To consider the processes, how the processes will work with the technology.
Yes, the process nuances. Great point. Shine, what's your closing advice?
Engage the end user.
Engage,
not implement top down.
So true. Russ, what is your closing advice in one sentence?
I think probably go back to my opening. Focus on what's most important, right? Put your energy there and the rest will fall in place.
Thank you so much for joining, and I will see you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing the knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Aaron Spool, head over to AventusAG.com. It's AventusAG.com. If you want to learn more about Tim Harrison, head over to WarmCommerce.com. It's WarmCommerce.com. If you want to learn more about Russ Graff, head over to netstock.co. It's netstock.co. If you want to learn more about Marcia Williams, head over to usmsupplychain.com. It's usmsupplychain.com. If you want to learn more about Shaheen Devani, head over to atb.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Randy Johnston, from K2 Enterprises, who discusses why process documentation is essential to manage growth. Also, the interview with Brian Sommer, who discusses why legacy ERP systems and artificial accounting practices need to change with time. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.